8.
Now, high, medium for usability. Perfect. Okay, no load. Okay, and now feasibility. High for feasibility?
This is just getting it from Medicare, getting it from
Should be 20, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we are voting either to recommend for endorsement or not to recommend for endorsement. With the condition which we talked about. Who would like to vote for to recommend for endorsement? With the condition meaning all instead of just hospital. Four.
And no range.
No range, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Sec 9.
And who would like to vote against in reimbursement? It's 11, so that's correct. No abstentions? All right. We finished the memo. Yes. Okay, so we just hit. Yes, Don.
Do we want to do anything? I mean, some of this, I could imagine, depends on what we do with the other memos, things, right, in terms of the overlap, or are we sort of seeing this as no real overlap? I mean, I'd be curious to the group of four or group of three memo things. I'm just still to the.
I think we can certainly do a combination, but I would just ask. On the last three, you would ask them if there was anything on their mind that we could include that would change their mind. And I would ask that we're excited for that.
The same as the prior, yeah. I mean, we talked about that with conditions, but are there other conditions?
The only condition that Sister Rebecca sent by, and again, it'd be nice, I'd be more favorable to the measure if the results were age stratified and if there were some validity data provided on the new Medicare,
okay. So the request would be age stratification would be 65.
It's less important in this measure, but there's no reason not to have it 65 to 70 in this population.
Okay.
It's less important than the other one.
How much did the incidence range change?
The incidence?
65, 70, 75 above.
There are two reasons the recall rate changes. Partly the incidence of cancer, but that's a trivial amount. Most of it is breast density continues to decline, and so the false positives just happen to go down a lot. Not the same range as 40 to 80, but.
What was the discrepancy between screening and diagnostic rules of the range in the coding?
In the incident?
No, the issue of the accuracy of the coding.
Oh, for the old code, about half of the screening exams were coded as diagnostic. So I my guess is the purpose of these codes was to fix that problem, but it was an enormous issue.
So then, just to be clear, I think we can all, I'm presuming we can all agree that that's an important piece of information we'd like. Let's take a quick vote to ask how many people is stratification for the CMS measure important? How many people feel that should be done? One. Okay. How many people feel that it shouldn't be done? And then I think I'm going to ask how many people are neutral and how many people feel that it shouldn't be done. So how many people are neutral, don't care one way or the other? And how many people would prefer that it not be stratified? Okay. So
patients include presumably dominated by the Medicare 65 and older, right? The disability population doesn't contribute at all.
Ms. Ray Gibbons, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, you said this condition of the CPT codes was something everyone would accept. I didn't accept it. That's why I was a single low vote on scientific.
No, the question was whether or not we want to ask them to provide that information.
Okay.
And I think we would all.
In terms of the previous vote, that was the basis for my low scientific acceptability.
But we're only voting now on approve or no.
Okay.
So the question is whether or not we would all like to have that information. And I was just presuming we would all like to have that information.
Rebecca Smith finally again. For the information, it doesn't have to be a perfect reference standard. If you can show that the distribution of current mammograms is about 90% with your screening code and 10% or 15% of your diagnostic code, that would be consistent with the distribution of actual mammograms.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds like
we
should just let that information
yeah.
flow back
to the committee.
To those,
yeah.
So.
Okay. Carl, then Don.
I just want to make a point we don't have to discuss it. Since this metric is very close to what we think of as follow-up rate or recall rate, I would think we need the same kind of information that we requested on the other recall rate. And if CMS has a valid way to produce that information, I think that would be nice. But I'm just saying that I know we're not thinking of this with other metrics, but just as a point of discussion, I think it becomes not as relevant when you don't have that information, and it's very similar to recall rate.
My only point on this is Mary Gemignani, is that this group is so uniform that you probably have data on cancer detection rates already, so you don't really need to collect it as you would in the other three measures that we were, and this is separate. So I think that when you got a recall rate within whatever center and you wanted to evaluate it, you could easily get the cancer detection rate because of where the data is coming from and the population
that
you're
studying. But I would like that bundled in automatically, not that somebody has to. I would like it as a package, not that this goes out and then somebody says, okay, what's the cancer detection rate?
Carl, you would like us to report out determinant rate, but also whether that indeterminate rate seems to be generating more cancer.
And what kind of cancer? I don't know if you can get the type of cancer and how much.
No.
But I think, Carl, I think what you're proposing is another measure.
That's true. It's not for discussion. I'm just pointing it out as a point of information that, to me, it becomes not as relevant as when we discuss recall rate. That's all.
Okay.
Can I just give you numbers for the recall rate by age?
We've
talked about it. The recall rate for women less than 40 goes from 9, and it drops to 8 for women in their 50s. 7.5 for women in their 60s, and 6.5 for women in their 70s. Those are the average.
So the stratification, though, what you're saying, if those are the recall rates, I mean, the stratification that you're talking about is, I mean, you're only going to move, you're moving such a trivial.
For the older women, it's a much smaller, I agree with you. That's what I'm telling you. For the young women, I think it's a much.
Well, no, you said it goes from, like, 9 to 8 to 7.
To 6.
9 to 8 to 7 to 6.
6 to 9 is a 50% difference based on...
Understood, but so if you think of the distribution of age of people in the practice, now for that stratification, I'd have to have, you know, a 10% or 15% change of old people to young people within a practice will get ground out in there because I'm looking at 15% on 4, so I'm looking at, you know, a half a percent of recall.
I think that's why it matters whether you're talking about coming up with really narrow ranges of quality or really broad ones.
Right.
If they're really broad ones, I completely agree with you. If you're getting up to narrow, we're talking about 10 to 14.
Yeah, but we
eliminated
the rate.
We eliminated.
So we weren't picking a rate.
We're not picking a rate.
No,
we're just,
right.
It's just public. All right, so just to tie up the discussion on this, we had a split vote. We are asking the measure developer to come back to us with information on the accuracy of coding, screening versus diagnostic, and I think we're of a mixed mind on stratification. One person strongly in favor of reporting stratification, a handful of people against it, and most people neutral. So we will vote again on this as well, Helen? Is that we will vote again with the additional information on this, but cemented in your memory. We're going to now change directions, and I'm going to pass the gavel to my colleague, and we're going to move to measures number...
Measures number, Howard, tell me here. What numbers do you... 7-8. And the rationale, for those who are not aware, one of our members is going to be leaving tomorrow, will not be around in the afternoon, so we'd like to try to get to these two measures. If we get to through two today, we'll be rocking. Something completely different, measures 7 and 8.
Is that instead of going home, Eric? Are we doing these two measures instead of going home?
No, but we'll then go home earlier tomorrow.
Yeah,
just a second.
Before you move into the new area, based
yes.
on the discussion we had previously, I would like to know from the committee, if that information that was requested, the stratification work was done, and UCPT codes were implemented and would be acceptable, would the committee endorse it or not? And the other
we're going to vote again. We're going to vote again. We're not going to make a commitment based on information we don't have.
Because the other one is that if they, all those things were, we would endorse it.
No, we didn't. Okay. We didn't vote again on either of them. We're just asking for information and going to vote again by email. Okay, now we'll move on to 7 and 8.
7 and 8. The measures are appropriate head CT imaging in adults with mild traumatic brain injury. So we'll just read them. So EP00710. Numerator is the number of denominator patients who have a documented indication consistent with the ACEP clinical policy for mild traumatic brain injury prior to imaging. And the denominator is the number of adult patients undergoing head CT for trauma who presented within 24 hours of a non-penetrating head injury with the Glasgow Coma Scale. Brigham and Women's Hospital.
So just as background,
the only issue with us
is
doing the measure and
then
asking.
Summer?
You're
right.
Both
is Brigham. And is somebody from Brigham coming tomorrow? Do we know?
I haven't heard anyone coming in person. They may be on the phone, but I don't.
Is there a way to find out? Because if they're not going to be here anyways, then there's no reason to do it today versus tomorrow.
Can we do cardiac?
Well, cardiac has ACC who is not here either in person. So mm-hmm. What is the third is spine? Are the spine
there
people here? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, there are two cardiacs that are CMS.
We could do the two cardiacs that are CMS.
10 and 11.
We could.
I can try to go place a call with them. If they're going to be on the line early in the morning, we could run their measures right at the beginning.
Should we start then? Discuss it now? Where's CMS? The other choice.
In the works, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, the chain is we got this is again one of these clinical works. CMS, there's head trauma.
Two Brigham ones are not very feasible. I mean, they could be done at the Brigham and nowhere else.
Well, that's good.
Did you read? I mean, they
but
basically
if they could be done at the Brigham.
It only works because of their integrated medical records system. Nobody else could do it. They even say that in their comments. They say,
it's
basically their own quality measure.
Yeah, but what you could do is an HMO test.
Not the data that they're asking for.
They're asking for
like what kind of
specific indications for ordering the exam. And
I thought it said in Mass General, like the nuance has the indications coded.
They're completely different systems that are not compatible with each other.
Partners in name alone.
No, but can't, yeah, right.
Oh, my God. This is the one thing that Medi-Cal's versus nuance is the one thing that almost tore partners apart.
But
intellectual property, conflict of interest.
But can't aren't those data available? No, I could, if you read it, I'll tell you.
Seven and eight.
Helen.
So the denominator is the denominator for seven is the one who had a head CT and mild traumatic brain injury. So you have to be able to define mild traumatic brain injury, and the numerator is met specific criteria, and they're very detailed, you know.
So even using those software products, you couldn't do that.
You have to have full access, full searchable access to the entire medical record.
So why did they propose it?
Well, because Brigham likes to say how far advanced they are compared to everybody else. So, I mean, if you read their justification under feasibility, There was a little paragraph here. I'll see if I can find it. I read it last night. I was laughing when I read it. We intend this to be suitable for public reporting in the future. However, we plan to continue our own internal quality improvement study to demonstrate efficiencies in imaging, which can be. And then specify the near-term path to achieve electronic capture. All data elements are not likely to be available to most providers currently.
So you read, why don't you read? Why
don't
we have to discuss it? I mean,
although although many EHRs include computerized order entry, most are not programmed to have guideline-based decision support. And Brigham and Women's Hospital Center for Evidence-Based Imaging has developed this. That's what they say.
So can we do this one very quickly?
No, it won't be so fast. A lot of good stuff.
How about the applicability of what they raise?
Applicability is an issue, but I think especially now, given the number of denials that people are seeing, they are learning that they have to have an ordering system that gives you not a process, not rule out, but an indication. And that's where this calls, it just falls in with that very nicely.
You need much more than that to meet this measure.
All I need to do is give you one reason, one thing that the patient has, it's consistent with that guideline, and then that's a success.
So I would say one is a guideline, not quality, and that link is hard to find. And two, everyone knows computer order entry, people game once they learn the right thing. And so proving that they really have that condition is much harder.
That's true with anything.
They totally
Without question, they could be gaming almost anything.
Absolutely.
Certainly with a lot of the guidelines.
Certainly in my world, people do it all the time. And then we change the rules.
are we just going to give up and go home? I think the issue is overuse. There clearly is overuse in head CTs. The question is, how do we go about addressing that issue? We just say, order less. What the hell does that mean? Does that mean on Thursdays I don't order head CTs? Or do I try to go about it in an organized fashion, looking at what we have in the literature based on clinical guidelines? So they are guidelines that address the patient population we work for us in terms of the emergency department. And we look at graded literature, not just someone's notion, not a consensus panel. So this is done based on a guideline that is pretty rigorous in the way it's put together. Now, I will also divulge I was part of the panel to put that together. I have the stars to show for it. But I think that this is a reasonable approach. The CMS guideline, all that is a count. You know, how many head CTs did you do per head? That doesn't get at the issue. The issue is how many appropriate or inappropriate head CTs did you use? And that's where this, although, yes, there are some difficulties with applicability, I think that this really does get to clinical medicine, not just someone with a dull sword trying to cut down the number of studies. Other than that, I don't have anything.
So, and my steps up is?
I'll be calling in, so I can do the preamble. I don't think
okay, good.
This is the preamble. I mean, I think the preamble about both these are, and also both of them first,
right?
CT in the setting of trauma, and a cervical spine CT in the setting of trauma, is that there is there are good evidence-based guidelines in both cases. There is evidence in the literature to begin with that both evidence-based guidelines, that current imaging far exceeds the evidence-based guidelines, and that there is evidence of overuse. And perhaps the only limitation, we'll go through it point by point, but the only limitation of all of this is that much of the evidence-based guidelines were first predicated on cervical spine radiographic imaging, not necessarily cervical spine computed tomographic imaging. Cervical spine computed tomographic imaging has been available for both CT and head and cervical spine for over 20 years, has been used, and so we have very good evidence that it is more sensitive than radiographs in the detection of injury. There is no evidence existing to date, even anecdotally, that the incremental cases that are picked up that affect outcome in a meaningful way, although they are more sensitive and they are useful in the guidelines that have been presented. So then starting with the appropriate head CT in adults for mild traumatic brain injury. So the main reason why I'm just using that whole preamble is it's not that CT has not been available 10 years ago when many of these evidence-based guidelines were used. It's just that we were still under the paradigm of using cervical spine radiography. Now, in most practices, a lot of the radiography has just migrated right over to CT imaging. So it's just something to consider in terms of judging the evidence. Just starting with the importance to measure and report and looking at these demonstrated high-impact aspects of healthcare, it is an enormous part of both the radiology practice as well as the emergency room/trauma practice, head CTs and cervical spine imaging in the setting of trauma. And so following down, I don't know if we give the rating as I go along. So as far as high impact, I think you need to completely the standard opportunity for improvement. Is also substantial evidence in the literature of both the use of the CT head rules in the setting of trauma, and the fact that despite the fact that these rules have existed for quite some time, that there is still excess use and considerable variability in the use of head CT in the setting of trauma. And so, again, I would argue that for this, more so than on the cervical spine where there are still some questions, it meets completely the opportunity for improvement standard. Under outcome or evidence to support measure focus, there's considerable peer-reviewed literature that goes way back. Like I said, CT in the setting of trauma has been used for well over, probably over 30 years now, but really in broad usage for at least 20 years, and really considerably bigger usage over the last couple of decades as CT imaging has been a lot quicker and easier to do. And so there's the Canadian CT head rule, CCHR, which has both been initially validated, and then subsequent studies were applied. And in the subsequent studies, they compared that rule to the New Orleans criteria and showed that the Canadian CT head rule was more specific overall, and that both rules were 100% sensitive to patients with injuries requiring intervention. So overall, on that basis, again, I think it meets completely the standard of outcome or evidence that supports the measure of focus. And then subsequently, the rating, the strength and the quality of the evidence, like I said, it's considerable evidence, particularly on the CT standard. There's really no quarreling about previous applications to radiography, because for head CT, we've just been doing head CT throughout the entire period of time. Let me just see what was down through then. Okay. So I think we're up to number two now. Okay. Scientific acceptability of the measure properties, measure specifications. The numerator statement is basically the number of denominator patients who have had trauma, as we'll define, who meet the criteria for imaging prior to imaging. And it will be, it's basically affecting just the initial visit, does not really include cases of follow-up imaging in the setting of trauma where either there's a known finding or a questionable finding. And then the list of indications that you see below are from the evidence-based criteria, which either include loss of consciousness or post-traumatic amnesia and at least one of the following findings, or as you see below, and again, I'm on page 7 now of this guideline, patients without loss of consciousness or post-traumatic amnesia, and either severe headache or vomiting if it goes on, age over 65, et cetera. We said the denominator is all those that have presented with the setting, with the in the setting of trauma.
I think there's a typo there.
Where?
I think it's the denominator is supposed to be people with a GCS greater than or equal to 14.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You can only dissect that. I didn't know that. You can only dissect that. Yeah, by reading it very carefully.
I was wondering about that. Okay, so what are we up to now? And the denominator exclusions are listed here. And I think that's it for 2A. I think we're on 2B. So reliability testing. There is evidence on all of this, and it has been validated, although I believe that they are, or maybe it's just the C-spine one, that they're actually undergoing validity testing right now as well. So I think actually in the reliability testing, you do have, it does meet completely the standard for reliability testing. Right?
Are you talking about
7
or 8?
I'm on seven. Okay. Same thing for validity testing. And they're not presenting validity testing, so I don't know what. So what is, I guess I need some guidance on that. They have these measures have been tested over and over. I mean, we have the 2005 paper in JAMA, which is a comparison with the Canadian CT head rule and the New Orleans criteria. So what, to what level do you need to actually judge something as being valid when you've already done a validation study?
Those are research studies, and the difference between this being in real practice, can you reliably collect these data on the paper,
record. Actually, several of those studies, in fact, are from real practice.
Oh, good. That's good.
They are.
It's not clear, and this is the kind of thing we'd love to be able to answer my...
Yeah.
It wasn't research. The data weren't collected for the research project, but were collecting in clinical practice?
Some were, especially if you look at some of the Dutch that have a very good registry. They did everybody to encourage them.
This was a prospective research study, it's not?
This is the culmination of a lot of multiple studies in terms of setting up the criteria. Now, I don't know what Jay, in terms of his work, I don't know if he's doing a study on this or not, agreeing with women, I can't speak to that.
This is Judy, what is the range, you know, if people measure it, what do you get out of that, which wasn't clear from this measure.
What is the improvement of quality?
So,
what's the upper limit of what?
Like, what are you measuring? What's an appropriate, you know, presumably they've applied this to their practice, and so they have a rate of 10%, or, you know, like, so
10% that are outside the guidelines, you mean, or?
Right.
Okay.
You know, there's no, it's hard to figure out what they mean by their ratio and what that gives you.
This is Jacqueline Bello. My interpretation of it was that framed in the sphere of overuse and efficiency, that the ratio would tell us what percentage of the gazillion CT scans that you're doing from that ER are actually meeting some criteria. So backpedaling, they go and they evaluated the Canadian Head criteria, the New Orleans criteria, and then came up with this nice little ASAP list, which they published, which is a collaboration of radiologists, ER physicians, and others. So once we know how many of your gazillion head CTs would really need these criteria, and they're trying to balance it with, and no, we're not being dangerous because you have to have a Glasgow Coma Scale of 14 or better, so we're not talking about not scanning the comatose. That there, no, their implication is, well, no, that's another issue.
Yeah.
But anyway, that their implication is that maybe somewhere between, say 37% of scans could be deemed as overuse. So the measure is to get a handle on institution by institution, ideally, whether the number of scans you're actually doing meets any criteria at all. And in today's operations, it's got the balance of the radiation and other than the dollar attached to it.
What's really going to happen, you all know this, anyone who practices clinical medicine, it's the Hawthorne effect. We start looking at this, and the numbers are going to drop dramatically. When I'm told, well, they're going to be looking to see for every head ding that they've at least got something, you know, show me something in this guideline, then suddenly you're going to start seeing adherence, and your number of head CTs is going to drop, or at least the rate of climb is going to slow. So that's really, so it's going to be very hard to say, well, look at the quality that we've given here. We don't have a baseline. If we could sneak in there right now and get a baseline across different institutions and then put this in place, then we could say, look at what we've done.
Patty, and I think this is going to come up again tomorrow as well. The other thing that's missing here is we don't know how many positives show up out of the ones that technically don't have indication. And that's part of what you need to really understand overutilization.
Although, this is Rebecca Simon, what the writers have said is they cited guidelines that have 100% sensitivity. So I'm not defending those, but I'm saying in application, if you have a guideline that you know are not going to miss anything significant, then you can just start looking at adherence to the guidelines and don't need to write them the primary misses that you're
asking. If you really want to understand that, Steve Gantler, you need to understand the evidentiary table that goes along with this guideline, which is about 16 or 17 pages long. It goes into detail of the evaluation of all the different papers, and that's how we agonized over that. We really did, in terms of, because no one wants to miss a, but you can't, by the same token, head buzz everyone that walks in the door.
Okay.
So do you use random criteria, or do you use no criteria, or do you try to be somewhat scientific?
Right. Components and heads.
It's a BMP.
And
just to add on there, somebody who, you know, practically doing the emergency room imaging, for, you know, 15 years right now. I agree with you fully, but I actually think that the guidelines put in place appropriately will influence practice. It'll influence the adoption of computerized physician order entry. It'll have so many external effects that will be favorable to the overall system that, you know, without overdoing the pun, this is a no-brainer to you. And I don't I think you really, you know, the opportunity here is to take something. This is, to me, like aspirin after MI. This is something where you're trying to find institutions that come very close to 100% compliance with the guidelines. Now, there's no question we'll find a certain degree of gaming by physicians that are ordering. They're going to remember a few symptoms that they have to put in there. That's the only way they're going to get it, and they're going to improvise about whether it was really a high-impact collision with, you know, intrusion of more than 18 inches or whatever the criteria are to make a major high-impact accident. But I do think that you'll actually, they have these very specific criteria, but I do think that you actually have an opportunity to really impact and improve care just by a relatively simple guideline. And I would say even in academic institutions, you find very, I wouldn't say poor compliance. You have some people with excellent compliance who are telling you precisely why they're ordering the SCT on everyone. And as we have joked since I was trained at WashU 20 years ago, that the indication for a head CT is that you have a head.
And we prefer a pulse as well. Reliability test? Are you at reliability
test? I was, and then I backed up. So
yeah.
Back.
Thank you.
The measure came in as non-testing, so it
was
kind of
okay. Okay. So let's go to, we can skip over testing analysis. The summary of evidence supporting exclusions, they mainly point out the populations that weren't included in the previous study. Either perceived to be a higher risk of serious injury, or in the case of pregnancy, due to concerns of radiation exposure to the fetus. So I thought those were at least, you know, either partially or completely supportive based on the evidence that we have. And no risk and not applicable for risk adjusted for outcomes, meaningful difference in performance. I think we're not evaluating. Care is not applicable, and so overall, to what extent was the criteria scientific acceptability of the measure properties met, I would say completely, notwithstanding the small exclusion groups. Then under usability, whether it's meaningful, understandable, and useful information, still undergoing current testing, so we don't really know what the findings will be from various institutions, but we would imagine that it would be along the spectrum of, like I said, with aspirin, where you have a percent compliant with the guidelines, and that it would probably be less than 100. So it would obviously be less than 100% institutions will have some latitude from the guidelines where you know, other measures may be taken. But in general, it would be that type of measure. And no harmonization, because there's no prior criteria and no prior guidelines in NQF. And so under what criteria, what extent was the criteria usability met? You know, I would say at least partially in the absence of actual applicability in data. Or, under feasibility, this is probably the most contentious issue. do. This is, I think, the challenge, and I don't know where the group comes down on this. But I can tell you, feasibility-wise, these are not easy to institute in terms of capturing information. This is not dissimilar in terms of getting information from PQRI and the Physicians Quality Reporting Initiative. And, you know, I can tell you that even a huge practice like we have at Yale, if you don't have well-coordinated computerized physician order entry and coordinated with data collection, it is an administrative burden. It is possible, and I think it is possible for everybody to be able to do it, but how you define feasibility, I think, is an open question. I would say that on this count, at least, one would have to say partially, you know, how are the data measures generated? I think, it's a byproduct of care processes, but it's not easily generated. It's not necessarily captured automatically. And you'll find, I think, that at smaller institutions, which the majority of patients are cared for, it may be more difficult to capture that information. They mentioned this computerized physician order entry, and I think that that is the way to do validation studies, and it certainly is the future, being able to use a measure like this, but I think this is the only limitation around the measure itself.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Rebecca Steinman, about when you say the feasibility? I think what they're saying is that if you've ordered a head CT and you've ordered it for mild traumatic brain injury, then you need one of these indications. So you need two steps. You need sort of defining the patient population and then within that population, defining the categories.
Right.
Is that feasible within the data order entry? The specific categories I get, so vomiting or not vomiting,
right.
You get, but the denominator, is that possible yet?
Denominator is a positive finding of...
No, mild traumatic brain injury.
That's a clinical finding, mild traumatic brain injury.
Right.
Right.
And so I don't know if this is defined from the radiology point of view, from the data that the radiologist could have access to, or...
Probably, and what happens at our institution is that, especially in trauma or in the emergency department, if the emergency room physician is ordering the study, it has to list an indication for the study. Now, sometimes their indication will put mild PVI rather than say, you know, they're vomiting. So that's an education issue. But I know that we certainly do our share of trauma in PT, and for us, data collection for trauma is we're not...
Even, you know, in the measure as submitted 4B.2, it says all data elements are not likely to be available electronically to most providers currently. Although many electronic health records include CPOE, most are not programmed to have guideline-based decision support, and they go on to say how they're doing it at the Brigham and this and that. They say it would be technically feasible to reprogram the system to do this. And then they go on to say that it would also be possible to do chart review, but that's not likely to be useful since a lot of time the information isn't in the chart at the time and it's not feasible. So I think this is the Achilles heel of this measure if it can only be done at a small handful of institutions today.
It's not that they actually use their core HIS system to do this. Right. This is a standalone, separate order entry system. My understanding of it, that was custom built for this. So this
but integrates with their.
It may integrate, but it's not like they used a commercial CPOE system, and you know, quote unquote, reprogrammed it. This is a hand built custom system.
Is this
actually
kind of
no? That's Richard Griffey. I was there, so I know they use a proprietary system. They use Precipio.
But they
it's
built
on top of it.
No,
they have their own order entry.
No. They built the interface between that and the electronic medical record system. That's what they built.
Right.
So,
I think that's right.
Yeah. No, I.
But I agree with that.
Right.
That's a great measure. The difficult piece of it is this piece, and to talk about you know, putting together a template to try to collect this data. And your concern, I think, was. How do you define the denominator? Is that right?
Right.
You would end
in
up being...
two separate populations. One is an ED-defined variable. The other is a radiology-defined variable. I'm not sure if they're...
So you would have to use the ED-defined variable, I would think, and it would have to... I mean, typically, the indication is almost never going to say, you know,
TBI, it's going to say, evaluate for intracranial hemorrhage.
Right.
Or
vomiting or headache.
Right. Well, actually, usually it's your fault.
So can I ask a clarifying question?
And then you know it's from.
So this system, proprietary system that does measure this, is proprietary to who owns it?
It was developed at the Brigham, and it is now licensed to a company that you can buy. That's the order entry system.
Right.
But the interface between the order entry system and the electronic medical record is a Brigham system, is a Brigham derivative.
Okay, so is there other systems out in the market other than this one that would allow you to measure this measure?
There's one other one, but again, you would need to develop the interface between that one and the medical record system.
You don't need a computerized system. You can do this manually. It might require some more of it, but you can hit it. We don't need to worry about proprietary systems. I think the other issue is, what direction do we want to push American medicine in? And this is the direction that we would like to have studies done for a valid indication, and we would like to have it. The appropriate information conveyed to the radiologist. Does this push us
in? Where would this system be, just to help me understand? Someone has to define it.
We're working on a paper system right now that we would be able to use.
So just walk me through how you could do this with paper.
Sure. Well, you know, it's partially computerized, but I click on the patient's name, and I said, I want to order a CT. And then it says, what are the indications?
Right.
Okay, altered mental status, whatever. Listing the mechanism, and what study do I want? I want to get CT, and what am I trying to rule out? I'm trying to rule out cranial hemorrhage. And then that has all the necessary information on it, and that goes to the radiologist.
But how could you get it out of that to report it to somebody to do NQF reporting?
Well, I think that, as was pointed out, that's the tough question.
So currently, the only way that could be done, that's what I'm getting back to, is using one of two proprietary systems, one developed by the person who's putting forth this measure. Just bringing this out, that's pretty clear. This would generate a large market. I just have to, immediately.
I think just to be fair, what they're actually putting forward is, and there was an attachment as well on a link to their website, it's actually really a deeper based chart. They're indicating they can collect it electronically using their system, but they're putting it forward as any other process measure which you need to go to the chart and collect the data.
Yeah, it's not like
and
anything
currently
else.
We don't have reliability capabilities for this measure. It could only go forward as for time-limited endorsements if the measure is not detected. We don't know, for example, how well that paper performs. How often can you, instead of looking at the actual data, how often can you find evidence of short-term memory deficit? Clearly indicated in the chart. That's what I think
the
time of endorsement period
for. I'm with you, Steve, on the importance of pushing American medicine to get to this. I just think that for us to vote to recommend for endorsement the measure, where it can't be done now is too early.
It's relevant. We've been doing PQRI, which is not similar. From radiology, PQRI has been a paper.
Can you give us an example
of this? On our head CTs, and I forget the exact measure, you all may remember, we have to put down the time the patient hit the emergency room and the time we did the study and whether we documented if there's an intracranial mass, hemorrhage, or shift.
But what percentage of practices are participating?
PQRI.
A lot. I don't know.
No.
Well,
minority.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
15 to 18%
of
the last day.
You're getting generous numbers.
Yeah.
How about the concept of sampling? We haven't discussed that. Is that an acceptable approach here? So you're not doing 100%, but you're doing a specific sample. But that gets away from some of your concerns. I hate to see a good idea really turned off because we don't think we can do it. How can we maybe get this thing so it might be acceptable?